Welcome to Soundings, a program of conversations and commentary from the National Humanities Center. Major support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities, with additional funding from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas.
Friendship Through the Ages, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for conversation and readings featuring the co-editor of the Norton Book of Friendship. I'll talk with Ronald Sharp of Kenyon College.
Make the attempt if you want to, but you will find that trying to go through life without friendship is like milking a bear to get cream for your morning coffee. It is a whole lot of trouble, and then not worth much after you get it.
The words of the American writer Zora Neale Hurston, read by Ronald Sharp. What is a friend? How do you define friendship? Next to love, it may be the most complex of human relationships. It's certainly an enduring subject for writers and poets, many of whose reflections on the subject appear in the Norton Book of Friendship, which was published last month. Ronald Sharp helped to create that collection. I asked him to explain how he and his co-editor, the writer Eudora Welty, assembled their anthology.
It was an enormously difficult task, Wayne. Eudora and I had literally thousands of options. We considered, and carefully considered, thousands of poems, short stories.
And you ended up with, what, 300 or something?
I'd say roughly 300. Uh-huh. But our lists kept growing and growing and growing, and we read and read and read and reread and thought about passages from works we had loved in the past, and people suggested new options to us.
Are you defining friendship, you and Eudora Welty, Ronald Sharp?
We're not really trying to define friendship. We're trying to provide a multitude of perspectives on it from various cultures, from various historical periods. One fantasizes in compiling an anthology that this will be the last word, that one will read everything ever written on the subject, carefully consider everything ever written on the subject, and choose unto eternity those works that need to be remembered. Uh-huh. But one quickly discovers that that's not possible and that it's not desirable. No, we're not attempting to define friendship, Wayne. We're attempting to provide a multitude of perspectives from many different cultures and many different historical periods. Mm-hmm. On what, after all, is an extraordinarily complicated facet of all of our lives.
Do you think that friendship is a constant in human nature as you look backward and forward in time and made these selections?
Well, clearly there are some things that are constant. Of course, from culture to culture and from historical period to historical period, friendship is defined and conceived and configured in all kinds of interestingly different ways. One of the most interesting anthropological studies of friendship, in fact, the only anthropological study of friendship which attempts to be fully cross-cultural, a book called Friends and Lovers by Robert Brain, takes up this question in some detail. And Brain contends that, in fact, there does seem to be something that one can talk about as a universal element in all human societies that we're aware of, that it does make sense to talk about something called friendship as a universal human impulse. Now, how to define that, how to be precise about how each culture conceives it, of course, is the problem.
Do you differentiate friendship from love? How do you combine them, separate them?
We don't differentiate them ourselves, Wayne. The writers that we include are constantly moving across those borders. As you know, it's not really possible to make very clear demarcations between love and friendship. There are instances in which the two spill over into each other, and there are instances when they begin to be separated from each other. The conception we've been using to handle this problem, this definitional problem, is that friendship, as we understand it, is an elastic category. Mm-hmm. It's a category that can bend. It has a breaking point. It can't bend forever. Yeah. There are points at which friendship becomes something else. But neither is it a narrow category that one wants to define in too explicit and tight a way.
All right. Now, let me stop you for a moment and pursue this business of your organizing principles, Ron. You have, for example, invitations, classic essays, poetry. You give Shakespeare a section all to himself.
Deserves it.
Affinities, the Bible, letters, short stories. These, I take it, are not merely, but they are categorical conveniences. You're not saying that we're going to find the best expression of friendship in any one of these,
No, not at all. When we began the project, one of the interesting discussions that we had was how to organize it. Coming to this project as a critic, as a scholar, I tended to be very anxious about this problem from the outset. I wanted to impose some organizational scheme from the beginning.
Yeah.
Eudora, as a working artist, tended to be just the opposite. She wanted to see where the material would take us. And thank God we listened to her.
Yeah, she says, for instance, that the differences between the two of you actually enriched the project.
Well, I think they probably did. And it was certainly a fascinating process working with her in every way.
Uh-huh.
But I think that the attempt that I wanted to make early on to decide on either a chronological or a generic or a thematic organization would not have worked very well. And I think Eudora was quite wise in counseling us to see what material we wanted to use and then see where the material wanted to take us.
All right. Now, a few moments ago, Ron Sharp, we began with a brief recitation about friendship from Zora Neale Hurston, who is a 20th century American writer. Give me another example of friendship from the Norton Book of Friendship.
How about this one from James Boswell's The Life of Samuel Johnson? Boswell is trying to impress Johnson, as always, with his aphoristic ease. And he says, in a nice formulation, "The feeling of friendship is like that of being comfortably filled with roast beef. Love, on the other hand, is like being enlivened with champagne." Dr. Johnson, not to be outdone by his younger pupil, responded, "No, sir. Admiration and love are like being intoxicated with champagne. Judgment and friendship, like being enlivened."
Tell me about your friendship with Eudora Welty. Here she is, your co-editor. Regrettably, she's not at a third microphone. Tell me what went on between the two of you. Were you friends to begin with when you put this together?
We weren't friends to begin with. We had met about 10 years before. We had a mutual friend who introduced us. We exchanged a couple of letters over the years, but we really were not friends. I had the idea for this anthology quite a long time ago, proposed it to a number of publishers who at that time responded unanimously that friendship was not a particularly interesting subject.
Well, this is a dead literary theme?
Well, I think it was a theme that didn't capture the imaginations of people 10 years ago.
Didn't bleed and it didn't wiggle, huh?
That's right. And in 1986, when Norton initiated the series of which this book is a part, I approached Norton again, and they indeed were interested. That was the point at which it occurred to me to ask Eudora Welty if she might be interested in joining me as co-editor.
Are you good friends now?
I think we have become good friends,
uh-huh.
And it's been a rare privilege.
You have an anecdote at the beginning of the Norton Book of Friendship. You talk about organizing this thing. We've mentioned that, the organizing principle. Tell me about the Windsor Hotel.
There is a Sheraton Hotel in Jackson, Mississippi, that has a room, a conference room called the Windsor Room, uh-huh. which is normally used for insurance sales meetings and seminars and that sort of thing. And we needed a place to work. We had thousands and thousands of sheets of paper and Xeroxes of material that we were considering or that we wanted to use. And we needed to spread out. Eudora, as she puts it memorably, believes that the shaping of a book is a physical process, that one actually has to pin, and that's her word, a wonderful word, one has to actually pin the various pieces together. When Eudora writes stories and poems herself, she often composes on scraps and bits of paper and spreads them out, and when she's eventually ready to begin putting the whole together, she spreads them out on a table or a bed or a floor and actually literally pins them together.
So that's what you two did together?
This is what we did. We took over the Windsor Room. We asked that...
the Windsor Room, not the Windsor Hotel.
Not the Windsor Hotel, the Windsor Room at the Sheraton in Jackson, Mississippi. And we asked that everything be moved out of the room and that the room be filled instead with tables.
Uh-huh.
And then we went around dealing out all of the Xeroxes that we had. And we walked around that room, waltzed around that room, danced around that room for hours and hours and hours, shuffling papers, rearranging things, juxtaposing things, discovering literally the shape that the book wanted to take.
Is this the kind of thing that people are going to read and come away and say, well, now I know how to be a better friend? Is this, I'm trying to provoke you, Ron Sharp, is this just another self-help book after a fashion?
I hope not, Wayne. One of the awful things that's happened to friendship in the 20th century is that it's become virtually the exclusive property of self-help manuals and pop psychologists. Friendship for centuries and centuries was one of the great literary and philosophical subjects, and it seems to have now been cast up into the cultural attic. Happily, it's being revived again. But our sense is not to provide platitudes that people could use on a Wednesday morning. But our sense still, I think, is that the language of friendship, the conception of friendship that one has an enormous effect on the way in which one actually experiences friendship. One's expectations, one's hopes, one's fears, one's satisfactions and disappointments are partly a function of the conceptions about friendship, about what friendship is and isn't, that one brings to it. In that sense, obviously, our hope is that this will have some impact on people's lives, but not in the way that a self-help book does.
Well, at the risk of moving into a little bit of psychobabble here, Ron Sharp, I mean, are the selections in the Norton Book of Friendship substantially other-directed, or do they move in the direction of, you know, that we get into the platitudes, it's best to be your own good friend, and then you're capable of being a friend to others? What about that?
I guess you're alluding to that famous bestseller a few years ago, How to Be Your Own Best Friend.
Well, not that particular, but sure, that kind of thing.
Well, I think it's undoubtedly true that, as with love, if one isn't a friend, as it were, with oneself, or has it the right kind of love for oneself, it's hard to love another or be friends with another. This is actually something that Aristotle talks about in his essay, part of which we quote, that there's an egotistical self-love, and then there's the kind of self-love which is honorable and a kind of prerequisite, a kind of self-respect for any serious love of another. Mm-hmm. The same applies to friendship. I think that's true. But I think the greater danger is in assuming that friendship is about me rather than about you.
Mm-hmm.
Friendship, at least in my view, and I think in the view of most people who've reflected on it seriously, friendship is not about me. It's about somebody else. It's about moving outside of oneself. And obviously, when one does move outside of oneself, when one does act in a friendly way towards somebody else, something comes back. We're involved here in the logic of gift exchange, give and you shall receive. But if you're doing it in order to receive, if you're giving in order to get something back, if you're trying to have a friend so that you will feel good, it doesn't work.
Give me another short take here from the Norton Book of Friendship, Ron Sharp.
Let me give you one, Wayne, a very brief one, a wonderful poem of Richard Wilbur's, apropos of our discussion about being inner-directed and outer-directed. What is the opposite of two? A lonely me, a lonely you.
Oh, that's very sweet, very touching. You've also got some sort of oddities and quirky kinds of examples of friendship here. Tell me about an unlikely pairing here, Groucho Marx and T.S. Eliot.
Well, it turns out that Groucho Marx and T.S. Eliot had a fairly long-standing and quite serious correspondence. They admired each other's work enormously. They began corresponding. And they had, among other things in common, the fact that they liked to smoke cigars. And as they began corresponding, at first in a frivolous way, they discovered a real element of affection for each other. And for many years planned to meet. They invited each other constantly to each other's home, but for one reason or another, they never could work it out. Eventually, Groucho got to London and came to Mr. and Mrs. Eliot's house for dinner. And later on, Groucho writes a wonderful letter to his brother Gummo, describing what actually happened at this fateful meeting of the great poet and the great comedian.
Goodness.
And the most marvelous moment in the evening, which Groucho recounts to his brother, is that at one point, Groucho, who is trying very hard to impress T.S. Eliot with his literacy, he had prepared for this meeting by rereading Murder in the Cathedral and The Wasteland and various other works of Eliot. Groucho begins out of the blue reciting lines from Eliot's poetry, and Groucho tells his brother that the great poet looked rather bored at this and was sort of yawning and arching his brow as though to say, I know my own poetry very well, thank you, and don't need you to recite it. Later on in the evening, T.S. Eliot started reciting lines from Duck Soup and various other of Groucho's movies. And Groucho then says to Gummo in the letter in which he recounts this, it was now my turn to arch my eyebrow and act as though I knew my own movies well enough, thank you.
Is this the oddest oddity in the literature of friendship?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a wonderful passage that we have from one of Colette's books, a memoir about her mother, in which she recounts her mother's friendship with a spider. Every night when her mother went to bed, she would sleep for a while, then awaken about 3 a.m. And she kept a cup of hot chocolate next to her bed. And every night when she awakened at 3 a.m, she would discover that there was a spider on the ceiling. Hmm. And the spider would come down on its thread, take a little sip of the hot chocolate, and then go back up on its thread. And they developed something of a friendship.
The animal rights people will love that one. That's, again, a very touching example in the literature of friendship. In the academy today, there are people who say that words are essentially, language breaks down, that meaning is it's impossible to move it from one culture, much less move it across time and space. This book, I take it, the Norton Book of Friendship, assumes that that isn't the case. What about this?
I think that's true, Wayne. This clearly isn't the occasion for an elaborate discussion of the kinds of philosophical and theoretical issues that you're raising. But I think it is fair to say that without being inattentive to those questions, this book does move on the assumption that somebody in 20th century America has something important to learn from Sappho, from Aristotle, from Cicero, from Montaigne, uh-huh. and from Yoruban folktales.
Does it speak to the educational dilemma or problem or challenge of what we call multiculturalism?
Well, the book certainly attempts to include the literature of friendship from many, many cultures. I haven't done an exact count, but I think we probably have about 20 languages and literatures represented.
Mm-hmm. Well, regardless of how we express friendship culturally, it's been neglected. Have I got this right? I mean, that's the thing that calls this book into existence.
I think that's right, Wayne. Anthologies of writing about friendship were relatively popular in the 19th century. Been very few of them in recent years.
Letter writing, for instance, was a big deal in the 19th century, and that was an expression of friendship.
Absolutely. I think this partly is a function of the problem of friendship itself in the 20th century in America. This is a culture of extraordinary mobility.
Yeah.
People are anxious sometimes about making friends because we live in a society where everybody's going to be moving within a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is a society which puts enormous premium on freedom, on not establishing too many bonds, on change, on individuality.
What about false friends like television sets? I mean, I don't mean to trivialize, but after a fashion, that becomes a kind of a substitute friend for many people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In addition, there's a kind of a fear of sentimentality, and it seemed to me a kind of endemic fear of sentimentality in the literary culture. At the opposite end of the spectrum, in addition to being sentimentalized, friendship is often the object of extraordinary cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
People are often taking the position that friendship is really just a kind of cover for self-interest, that friendship is a kind of elaborately dressed-up egotism. And that the way to understand friendship is through an analysis of various kinds of power relationships. So that these things are beginning to change in some ways now, and I think the new interest in friendship that's emerged in the last few years is to some extent an interesting historical phenomenon in its own right.
I want you to, we've just got a few more minutes here, Ron Sharp. I want you to give me one more example from the Norton Book of Friendship. Again, you and Eudora Welty started with thousands of possibilities. You got this down to about 300 selections. Give me one more instance.
This is a comment in a letter from Turgenev, the great Russian writer, to Flaubert. We are a pair of moles burrowing away in the same direction.
That brings it down to earth, doesn't it?
It does.
Ron Sharp, your book with Eudora Welty is The Norton Book of Friendship. A parting shot here. Does friendship have a future?
Of Of course it has a future, Wayne. You know, it wasn't so long ago that certainly my own experience, I've been working on this subject for many years, was asking university college English professors which works about friendship I ought to be reading. Almost nobody had lists for me. One could ask about love, one could ask about sexuality, one could ask about marriage, ask about war, thousands of other subjects. Everybody had 25, 30, 40 books off the top of their head. Ask about friendship 10 years ago. Didn't Montaigne write an essay? Isn't there something by Emerson? What right. about The Merchant of Venice? And that was about it. There are lots of hopes we have for this book, and some of them have to do with the more serious matters you were talking about earlier, about influencing people's lives and their own friendships. Others of them have to do with this matter. It's my hope that at some level, this book will help people answer that question more readily.
Ronald Sharp is co-editor with Eudora Welty of the Norton Book of Friendship, which was published last month. Ronald Sharp is a professor of English at Kenyon College and the former editor of the Kenyon Review. The program is Soundings, Conversations and Commentary from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. To conclude Soundings this week, I asked several friends and colleagues here at the Center to read some other selections from the Norton Book of Friendship. The voices you'll hear next belong to Annabel Patterson of Duke University, Zhang Zhilian of Peking University, David Smith of Williams College, Hortense Spillers of Emory University, and my colleagues Robert Connor and Kent Mulliken of the National Humanities Center.
Sonnet 30 by William Shakespeare. When to the sessions of sweet silent thought I summon up remembrance of things past, I sigh the lack of many a thing I sought, and with old woes new wail my dear time's waste. Then can I drown an eye, unused to flow, for precious friends hid in death's dateless night, and weep afresh love's long since cancelled woe, and moan the expense of many a vanished sight. Then can I grieve at grievances foregone, and heavily, from woe to woe, tell o'er the sad account of four bemoaned moan, which I knew pay as if not paid before. But if the while I think on thee, dear friend, all losses are restored, and sorrows end.
Taking Leave of a Friend by Li Bo. Blue mountains to the north of the walls, wide river winding about them. Here we must make separation and go out through 1,000 miles of dead grass. Mind like a floating white cloud, sunset like the parting of old acquaintances who bow over their clasped hands at a distance. Our horses neigh to each other as we are departing.
Poem by Langston Hughes. I loved my friend. He went away from me. There's nothing more to say. The poem ends, soft as it began. I loved my friend.
The Pasture by Robert Frost. I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away and wait to watch the water clear, I may. I shan't be gone long. You come too. I'm going out to fetch the little calf that's standing by the mother. It's so young it totters when she licks it with her tongue. I shan't be gone long. You come, too.
Elysium is as far by Emily Dickinson. Elysium is as far as to the very nearest room, if in that room a friend await felicity or doom. What fortitude the soul contains that it can so endure the accent of a coming foot, the opening of a door.
Three passages from A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers by Henry David Thoreau. We are sometimes made aware of a kindness long past, and realize that there have been times when our friends' thoughts of us were of so pure and lofty a character that they passed over us like the winds of heaven unnoticed. When they treated us not as what we were, but as what we aspired to be. Friendship is evanescent in every man's experience, and remembered like heat lightning in past summers. Fair and flitting like a summer cloud, there is always some vapor in the air, no matter how long the drought. There are even April showers. Surely from time to time, for its vestiges never depart, it floats through our atmosphere. It takes place like vegetation in so many materials, because there is such a law, but always without permanent form, though ancient and familiar as the sun and moon, and as sure to come again. The heart is forever inexperienced. No word is oftener on the lips of men than friendship, and indeed no thought is more familiar to their aspirations. All men are dreaming of it, and its drama, which is always a tragedy, is enacted daily. It is the secret of the universe.
Selections from the Norton Book of Friendship, published last month and edited by Ronald Sharp and Eudora Welty. You heard the voices of Annabel Patterson of Duke University, Robert Connor and Kent Mulliken of the National Humanities Center, Zhang Jilian of Peking University, David Smith of Williams College, and Hortense Spillers of Emory University. The program is Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Soundings on the Literature of Friendship is available on cassette. For a copy of the preceding program, send $5 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 584. That's program number 584. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code 27709. Send $2 for a complete listing of Soundings discussions available on cassettes. And when you write, please mention the call letters of this radio station. The National Humanities Center is eager to hear your comments about Soundings.
You've been listening to Soundings, a program of conversations and commentary from the National Humanities Center. Next week, the topics will be authorship and publishing. Wayne Pond will talk with Mark Rose of the University of California Humanities Research Institute. Herbert Bailey, former director of the Princeton University Press, will offer commentary. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Please join us again next week at this time on this radio station. Partial support for Soundings comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Friendship Across the Ages, this week on Soundings. I'm Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Listen for Ronald Sharp, co-editor with Eudora Welty of the Norton Book of Friendship. Next to love, friendship may be the most complex of human relationships. Although it's an enduring subject for writers and poets, according to Ronald Sharp, lately it's been something of a lost literary art. Friendship, Literature, and Culture, some answers and insights from the National Humanities Center, this week on Soundings.